Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
The Pet Doctor is brought to you by Dog.com. For everything and anything dog, shop Dog.com today for all the top brands. Greenies, Frontline, Kong, Nylabone, Royal Canin, and more. Shop at Dog.com and use the promo code SADDOC, S-A-D-D-O-C, and get $15 off your order of $75 or more.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
You might think that most DVMs embark on their journey to veterinary school from either working on a farm or a veterinary clinic. Dr. Matt Toy took a slightly different route, from literally flying high as a Special Forces member of the Green Beret to Auburn University School of Veterinary Medicine. This non-traditional treat was his hallmark in his career. Dr. Matt has chronicled sundry adventures as a veterinarian in his book, You Want Me to Declaw What? A Rampaging Bull, an Out-of-Control Chimpanzee, and a Goose Named Gary. Dr. Matt Toya has seen it all and will tell us all about it in today's episode of The Pet Doctor on PetLifeRadio.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after the short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
There's a movement afoot. ShoeBuy.com. Join the millions of people who shop ShoeBuy.com's over 400 brands and 500,000 products. Order now and get free shipping and free return shipping. ShoeBuy.com, the world's greatest shoe store.
Walk your dog in style and comfort. Enter the code DOCTOR, D-O-C-T-O-R, at checkout and get a 10% discount plus free shipping at ShoeBuy.com.
Love your pets but wish their medications were a lot less expensive? They are at 1-800-PETMEDS. You'll not only save on flea and heartworm medications, but on prescriptions for arthritis, incontinence, thyroid, and more. And you get fast service, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, our licensed pharmacists ensure accuracy, monitor drug interaction, and more. See why over 5 million people have trusted their pet's health to 1-800-PETMEDS, America's largest pet pharmacy. Call now or order online.
Go to PetMeds.com/doctor, D-O-C-T-O-R, to get 10% off any order and free shipping on orders of $39 or more at PetMeds.com.
FTD's network of over 40,000 florists around the world have been creating beautiful handcrafted arrangements for 100 years. Each arrangement is delivered the same day and backed by FTD's 7-day satisfaction guarantee. For a century, people have trusted their most important occasions to the flower experts at FTD.
Since Pet Life Radio is all about puppy dogs and flowers, our listeners, that's you, can get a 20% discount on your order. Just go to florop.com and use the code DOCTOR20 at checkout. FLEUROP.com, code word DOCTOR and the number 20.
Hi, and welcome to The Family Pet on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Colleen Safford. Each week, we'll focus on different topics: child pet safety, child pet training, just how to make an appropriate pet selection for your family. All of these things will be covered in each one of our episodes. So we hope that you will join us at The Family Pet on Pet Life Radio.
Every week, on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Toya, thank you for being with us today. You have had a very unique way of your journey to become a veterinarian. Tell me a little bit about how do you go from being a Green Beret to a veterinarian?
Well, actually, I grew up as an Army brat. You know, so my parents were there. My dad was in the military, and we traveled all over the world. But as a result, every year and a half we moved, so I never had a pet growing up. So I can't say that, you know, when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a veterinarian. I didn't know there was such a thing as a veterinarian, let alone spell it. So it wasn't until my second time starting in college, because after I got out of the Green Berets, and with the aspirations of becoming a surgeon, a human surgeon, I enrolled at the University of Maryland and promptly flunked out after my first semester.
You sound like me. I didn't do too well my first semester in college either.
Yeah, so, well, good. We have something in common. And it wasn't until later that our company I was working for, I was a lineman for a power company here in Florida.
Now, that's being very close to being a veterinarian. How are Special Forces?
Yes. So they wanted me to go back to college. And I said, no, I'm not college material. You know, I just can't handle that, you know. And, you know, making all the excuses that I could, just trying to save my ego. But they want me to at least get some kind of a background in business so that I could move into the office and work with the power company and stay with them. But the first semester in college, talking with another group of kids, you know, we talked about, you know, what are we going to do when we grow up and that type of thing. And they said, well, you know, you say you love medicine, but you really can't work on people or you don't want to work on people. Why don't you be a veterinarian? And I looked at them and I said, what's a veterinarian? And they told me he was working on animals. Well, when I was a kid, I used to bring home everything. I mean, lizards and snakes and everything. I'm driving my mother crazy. But I didn't even know there was such a thing. And the next day I went down and talked to the counselor. I was a guy that was terrified of just going back to a junior college to get a two-year degree. And when they told me it was, at least 9 years to get a veterinary degree, I said, fine, that's what I want to do. And that was it. And then my grades changed and went from C's to straight A's, and because then I was motivated. And I absolutely love it. It's what that taught me to think outside the box and to, you know, follow the dream.
Now, following your dream outside the box is for most veterinarians to become an author.
During my practice, people say, well, you know, what was the most exciting thing you ever did as a veterinarian? And, you know, tell me about some of the stories. And people liked hearing about them. And my lady friend said, well, why don't you write a book? I said, no. I mean, I hated to read. I mean, I was a kid that grew up, and I don't think I read four books in my entire life. And I started reading a lot, and I loved Harriet series. I mean, I would envy the gentleman so much. I said, boy, I wish and I would laugh hysterically. I mean, like every veterinarian who read his books, things that happened to all of us. And here, you know, he was the guy that could put it into, I mean, this guy could be a garbage collector and make it a bestseller. I mean, that's how his style of writing was so entertaining. And I loved doing I love doing everything. You know, I don't think I could stand working in an office. So the idea of working on all different animals is what really appealed to me. And that's what I loved, getting out of the office and doing the emergencies and taking care of large animals as well as small and exotics. It was a dream come true for me.
So you practiced all throughout the United States, or where is your office located?
My first office was here in Florida, in Tampa, Florida, where I started, where I did a lot of the initial things I did with horses and working part-time with doing large animals, because I was working full-time for a small animal clinic. And then I went in my own practice and continued doing the horses because I really enjoyed that. And then I moved to New England with an opportunity I had up there and did strictly large animals. And then eventually I opened a small animal clinic because I wanted to keep my hands in it because I really enjoyed the small animal surgery. And through all of this, was able to amass all of these different experiences.
The title of your book, You Want Me to Decline What? Decline is such a contentious subject right now.
Actually, that's sort of why I picked that topic. I mean, we went through several choices. I think the first one was help, there's a dragon in my carport.
And okay.
My editor shot that one down. He said, well, that sounds like a children's story, you know, the dragons. I said, okay. So, and another one was I couldn't save them all. And
that's
said, well, that sounds like a religious documentary. So we went through several things, and even though I know it's a very controversial subject, and veterinarians have a lot of mixed emotions and mixed feelings about it, and I don't think it's the first choice of any veterinarian, but if it comes to whether or not a house pet is going to be declawed or euthanized, I think decloning is the lesser of two evils, but then again, some people would rather have you euthanize the animal. And I think every veterinarian does the same thing, has all the owners consider the options, you know, such as the soft claws or the other things that will help keep the animals from scratching the furniture. And then there are different options available. The bear was actually something that was adopted by a family in Tampa when it was a little tiny cub. It was an Asiatic sun bear. And, you know, they're cute little things. You don't hold it in your hand, you know. Well, it grew up to be, you know, 300 pounds almost. And they didn't want to have it any more to do with it because it outgrew their house. So they were going to have it euthanized. And a lady who was a wildlife conservationist and who had a farm outside of Tampa with all kinds of rescued wild critters took the bear in, and she's the one that called and asked me if I would be able to declaw it. And I said, okay, why not? I mean, I've never declawed a bear before, but it was always, and ended up, they actually, I think I declawed probably four bears during that whole period. But it was a different experience. And the bear was so neat. After the surgery and after his paws healed, you know, they invited me out there to wrestle with him, and I said, well, I hope he doesn't have a good memory. And they didn't. So it was a lot of fun. When my practice in New England was right next to a Naval Air Station, and I had a nonprofit foundation that I created inside my animal hospital for pets, because whenever these military personnel on the base would leave, many times they would leave their pets behind because they were traveling overseas and they couldn't take them with them and they couldn't find a home for them, so they just turn them loose, especially the cats. And then so the base commander's wife and the other wives on the base recruited or volunteered several of the sailors, and they would go out and capture these semi-feral animals and bring them into me, and we would either spay them, neuter them, vaccinate them, treat them, whatever that'd be done. And we had we would put them out for adoption, and we had a 98% adoption rate for all these feral animals that came in. I feel very good about
that. That is spectacular. So with all your experiences and all these various animals, you must have a couple that have been extremely memorable. What stands out?
I think probably two that stand memorable to me, because the one was, you know, when I was in vet school, you know, we have to learn about all different species. And the most unpleasant for me were working on cows and working on pigs and working on chickens. So when I graduated, I said, okay, I am not going to deal with these three species. It's not pleasant for me to do it. I just didn't want to do it. So one of the first calls I got, I mean, in my first year in my own practice, was in the middle of the night. I got a call from my answering service, because we didn't have cell phones back then. I did have a mobile telephone, but they said there's a woman who has a cow that was in labor that needed an emergency call, and you know, 11 o'clock at night, and I've been on the road all day, and it was not very pleasant. So I said I don't do cows, period. And they said, well, she's crying, and she says, you know, even if she tried everybody, and you know, if I can't go out there, would I at least talk to the lady? And I said, okay, well, I'll talk to her. So I talked to her. And it was obviously an elderly woman, and she was crying, and this was her pet cow, and she didn't have a farm. It was just one of her pets. And she asked me if I couldn't do it anyway, at least come out and euthanize it. And of course, that's the last thing I want to do, but I said, well, I'll come over, and it's not much. I don't have the tools or the instruments or anything else to work on cows. I do horses. But
what was the problem?
Well, it was in labor, but the calf was breech. I mean, it was turned so that the back was right to the cervix. So I went in, and first of all, I said, well, the calf is probably dead at this point. So I went, I examined her, and went out. I put on the gloves and everything else, and went to a rectal exam and an vaginal exam, and found out, yes, there was a calf in there, it was stuck, but it was still alive. And just, you know, without even thinking, I said, well, we might be able to do a cesarean and save the calf, but, you know, I don't think we'd be able to save mama. And I'm thinking, what did they say? So I ended up doing a cesarean, and both mama and the baby came out fine, and I left there, and she asked me, she says, well, would you be upset if I named the calf Matthew? It was a little bull calf. So that was something I hadn't planned on doing and almost refused to do and ended up doing it anyhow and was very proud that I could do it.
Pretty special.
Well, probably the most exotic animal would be a leopard that I was called, because the zoo veterinarian that was on duty was out of town, and they called me if I would go in, because this leopard had just recently come in, and she was pregnant and she was in labor.
I'm seeing this trend that you're the obstetrician now.
It seems that way.
Yes.
I went there, and of course, you know, wild animals are not easily examined, and they're not very tractable, and they had a squeeze cage, you know, one of these stainless steel cages where they can herd the animal in and then close the doors on both sides, and then one wall, they can pull one wall tight so that the animal is squeezed to the point where it cannot even turn around. So that way I was able to go in the other side and go in from the rear and see if I could help. And again, but this was a kitten or a kit that was just partially out, but it had been out for, you know, quite a while and hadn't made the first kitten, so she couldn't push it any harder, wouldn't go any further. So I lubricated and everything else, did all the things I was supposed to do, and we talked to the guys outside. There's one guy standing there with a rifle just in case anything went wrong, and the other two guys were holding the squeeze cage so that the cat, the leopard, couldn't turn around.
Okay, yeah, this is safe medicine.
Yeah, right, well, not really. You know, so when I started pulling, she started pushing, and we weren't getting anywhere, so finally I had to really just put as much torque as I could and pull the kitten out. And as I did, the brackets on the squeeze cage, one of the brackets broke. You know, stainless steel is not supposed to rust, but, you know, you put it in a salt environment, anything will give way. And the next thing I know, here, I'm holding this little leopard kitten, and Mama is staring me right in the eye, because the first thing she snapped and turned around.
I'm going to make everybody just wait and listen, because we're going to take a short break. We're listening right now to Dr. Matt Toya. I want to know how this ends, but we're all going to have to sit, wait, and listen to this commercial. We'll be right back after the short break, and we'll find out what happened when all of a sudden the squeeze cage broke, and here he is, eyeball to eyeball with a big kitty, Mama Kitty. Hold on. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
At Petco, we really love pets. There isn't anything we won't do to make sure they're getting the best products and the best care. So when you ask us a question like,
"So how do you feel about cat condos?"
we can say from experience,
"Feels like home for her."
Enter the code DOCTOR10, DOCTOR, the number 10, and get 10% off any order. No minimum at Petco.com.
Hello? Danica, where have you been?
Oh, Grandma, I've been busy, you know, racing, GoDaddy girl.
Oh, I built my own online store with GoDaddy.
Really? Let me see. Grandma'sAuction.com? Hey, aren't those Grandpa's golf clubs?
Grandma needs her bingo money.
Use promo code DOCTOR10, DOCTOR, the number 10, and get a .com domain name for just $7.49 at GoDaddy.com.
If you ask the question, what do I want? What do I need? I'll take affection. Irene should mention, I need time, I need love, I crave attention. This is New Waiting by the Dawn. With shaking tails and happy hearts. And running circles round the floor. That's always when the party starts.
Oh, they got party.
They are my friends, they are my children, they are the first.
I Love My Pets, the new single by Mark Winter, available in iTunes.
Aquariums and pond keeping are among the most popular of all hobbies in the United States and throughout the world. In fact, fish are probably the most numerous pet in people's homes and in their businesses. In Aquarium Mania, we'll learn more about the secret and not-so-secret life of fish and other inhabitants, the basics of good aquarium keeping, the complexities of the aquarium industry, and the science and art that surround this fascinating hobby. I'm your host, Roy Anong, and I'd like to thank you for joining us. Aquarium Mania.
Every week, on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Okay, Dr. Toya, I have to know. You're still alive, so that's good.
I'm still alive.
Cats eat you. So what happened?
She turned around and saw me, and all she knows is she was in pain, and I was the guy standing there. And I guess, and I, of course, I don't remember a whole lot about this right then, but I must have squeezed the kitten because it let out a little squeak. And it was amazing, the sudden transformation in that leopard. All of a sudden, she knew. She knew what happened and knew what I wasn't there to hurt her kitten. And she just, her demeanor just relaxed a lot. So still keeping eye contact, you know, I very gently set the kitten down in front of me and
I only had
6 inches I could back up. But I mean, I backed up just at 6 inches. And, you know, sort of watching me and watching the kitten, she came over and started sniffing it and then just kind of scooped it over to where she was and she started licking it. And at that point, they opened up that rear door and I scooted out hastily as I could.
Isn't motherhood wonderful?
And the poor guy with the gun was shaking. You know, he said, I couldn't shoot her. I didn't know if I was going to hit you or the leopard. I said, well, if she attacked, I would just as soon as hit me. I would rather get shot and killed than eaten.
Put you out of your misery. Now that is an exciting, exciting story. And hopefully you haven't had many more of those.
Not that exciting, no.
What were some of the other creatures that you've treated? Because it sounds as though you've had a very illustrious background of cats to dogs to leopards to snakes and alligators. Or have you done alligators?
Yes, I've done alligators. In Tampa, I mean, and the dragon story was actually about a very large river otter, but I think probably the most emotional story for me was the elephant.
What happened with that one?
And I was called to euthanize. Isn't that when I was up in New England? And there's a traveling circus that goes around, Cobra the Circus, and very nice people, and they take very good care of their animals. And I got a call one day that the circus was in town, and it was the manager. And he asked me if I would come out and euthanize one of his elephants. Yeah, I get all the good deals. Yeah. So I said, well, I'll be glad to come out and look at it. I'm not sure I'm ready to euthanize it. I don't know what the problem is. He said, well, the elephant's been down for more than 24 hours. You know, and she's the matriarch. She's the oldest elephant in our group. And I knew that if an elephant, I mean, that's one thing we learned. If an elephant's been down for more than 24 hours, it's pretty well a one-way street. It is not going to get back up again.
So literally down, laying down on its side?
Down, or? You know, down. Well, actually, it was down. It wasn't on its side. I mean, I would really been concerned. It was actually in sternal, but it was down, and it had been that way for 24 hours and hasn't eaten or drinking. So when I went and talked to him, I said, look, I have to at least do a cursory examination. You know, I will not euthanize any animal without at least examining it and see if I can possibly think of a way that we might be able to work this out. So I examined her, and of course, when the elephant's down and I walk up, I mean, we are literally eyeball to eyeball. You know, I'm 6 feet tall, and when she's laying down, she's 6 feet tall, or at least her eyes are 6 feet tall, so they are huge animals.
So besides being the obstetrician, now it seems like you should be the ophthalmologist too, eyeball to eyeball with the leopard,
right.
Eyeball to eyeball with the elephant.
Well, it was I know, as a veterinarian, you can understand this, and some people can, and some other people can too, is that when you make eye contact with something, there's something that goes between the two individuals, and when you get a connection with that animal. And I do that. A lot of the animals that come in to see me, when I get an eye connection with them, they understand why they're there, and they seem to relax. I mean, maybe it's just, I have a way with animals. I mean, I didn't realize I had it until I went into practice. But I said, I can't euthanize this animal without more information. I mean, I took her temperature was normal. and her color was good, her heart rate was fine, and I said, I really want to draw some blood and take it and do a blood test and see if I, what I can fix, you know, if I can find something that might be treatable. And I could see the guy kind of roll his eyes around and say, oh boy, isn't one of these doctors just trying to, you know, suck me for more money? And I saw that, and I said, look, if I don't find anything that's treatable, I'm not even going to charge you for the lab work. So he said, okay, then go ahead and do the lab work. You know, that way. So I took it back and ran the test, and what I found, I've got a complete lab in my hospital, so I did a CBC and a complete blood chemistry profile, and surprisingly, an elephant's physiology is very similar to that of a horse. So I'm being very familiar with horses. I said, okay, well, I compared the two. And all I found out is she was just anemic, and that was it. I mean, there was no infectious process going. All of her organ values were within normal limits. She was just anemic. She was just weak. So having dealt with show horses, I practiced in Tampa, I did the Lipizzano stallions when they would come into town. So I had my own concoction that I would made up of not anabolic steroids, but just of stimulants, you know, that would be B-complex and vitamin iron, things that I would make up into an intravenous injection that would work.
So elephant geritol, in other words.
Yeah, like geritol, exactly. So I made up, probably, I think, about 8 liters of fluids mixed with all of this, and I loaded it in my car and went down there to the zoo grounds. And I told him, I said, I think her only problem is she's anemic, and I think we can save her. It's worth a try. Now, because she was the matriarch, I mean, she was the, you know, the head mama of all of the elephants in the circus, they agreed to it. So we sat there, and I had people on both of her ears, because the ear veins were the largest and the most accessible. And the whole time, she just sat there, and she just watched me and watched the others as we were sticking needles in her ears and putting all these fluids in there. And when we got done, I put my stuff away, you know, my mouth opened, and as it sometimes happens, things come out that I have no idea what I'm saying. You know? And I said, okay, well, it's about 2 o'clock now. I said, at 4:15, she's going to stand up. She's going to drink 2 buckets of water, eat a bale of hay, and she's going to pull at her chain trying to get into the circus for the show tonight. And at that point, everybody kind of looked at me like, what a loony tune this guy is. And they just all turned around and walked away.
Besides being the obstetrician, ophthalmologist, now you're the comic.
Yeah. I mean, it just, I said, oh, boy. And even my staff looked at me like I was crazy. And I said, what did I just say? You know, did I say something? And so I go back, you know, tail between my legs and go back to my office and, you know, figuring, well, at least I tried.
Well, okay, got to tell us.
4 o'clock, the phone rings, and the guy is almost hysterical on the phone. He says, you're not going to believe this. She just stood up. She drank 4 buckets of water, ate a bale of hay, and now she wants to go into this for the show. So, as you can imagine, at that point, they think I walked on water. I mean, and I became their veterinarian every time they came to New England for the next 4 or 5 years. That was a very emotional thing for me. I mean, and every time I walk near that elephant, she would trumpet out, and I would have to go over, and she wanted to wrap her trunk around and snuggle with me.
Oh, I can see why you saved her life.
I was in tears. I mean, I just fell in love with that elephant.
Did you ever figure out why, Dr. Matt, why she was so anemic?
She was just, she was old. I mean, she was like 46, 47 years old. And their schedule is so hectic. You know, they're on the road all the time, so it's very stressful. And I'm sure the stress had a lot to do with it. Because the following day, after this, they put her on a special truck and sent her back down to Sarasota and to recuperate. And then they told me that they left it up to her whether or not she wanted to come back into the traveling circus routine. And she did, until she trained the next matriarch to take over, and then she retired down there in Sarasota.
Any idea how many years it was till her final retirement?
3 years, I think. She stayed with him for 3 years.
That's fairly impressive. That's good. So treating all of these exotic animals, it seems like a lot of times you're having to go ahead and use information that you glean from other species, ones that you know more commonly, like the horse and the cow.
Sure.
So I love these stories. You have some great stories. So now we've had the sun bear that needed to be declawed, the leopard mother in dystocia having difficulties delivering, and you delivered it and lived to tell about it, and everyone else did well. Now this elephant, anything else?
Oh, there's a lot of them. One in particular was right down where I lived. I lived in a town called Abington, which is south of Boston. My practice itself was in Weymouth, which is the next town up. But one of my large animal clients was a gentleman who owned a heavy hauling company. You know, well, you see these huge trucks that go down the road with these bridge girders, you know, on the back of them, on the trailers. He had one of those companies that did that. And his passion were Clydesdales.
Huge horses.
Big horses. And he would actually contract a 747 to go over to Scotland and pick out animals that he'd purchased over there and bring them back to the States. And on this one particular occasion, this was in February, he had just brought, I think, four or five back from there. And he actually had a Clydesdale team for Budweiser. He had the Budweiser trucks, or not trucks, but wagons. And the only way you could tell that they were his horses versus Budweiser's horses is on the harness. The harness would have his logo of his company rather than the Anheuser-Busch logo. But other than that, it was identical. I mean, you know, the wagons would all have the Anheuser-Busch colors and everything else. So they used his horses a lot of times where they had to do something simultaneously where they couldn't take the other teams and bring them up. He would use his horses in New England. But he had just brought a new stallion in to try and, I guess, get some fresh blood in the herd. And I was sound asleep. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning, I think. And he pounded, somebody was pounding on my door, and I went to answer it. And he was this guy. I mean, and this guy's like 6 foot tall, and he's got this huge company. He's a burly guy, and almost in tears. And what happened is his new stallion broke out of his stall and then opened up all the other stalls, and all of his horses were out wandering around, not only just the compound of where his facility was, but also out on the main highway. And it was the police that found, you know, they're driving in their routine patrols, they found one of his Clydesdales grazing on the side of the road.
That's a disaster waiting to happen.
Oh, definitely. So they called him, you know, they called him in, and he got all the horses together except for one. They couldn't find it, and it was his big stallion, and he had no idea what happened to him. So they finally, I guess the stallion took off back behind the barn, which was all frozen swamp. And with the weight of the horse, you know, he didn't get too far, and all of a sudden he just went right through and sunk up to his chest in this huge mud and swamp, and it was freezing, and he couldn't get out. So he tried to get the horse out, and he couldn't do it. So that's when he came to me and wanted to know what I could do to help get the horse out. So I got all my stuff together and went over there. And fortunately, you know, and I went out there, and then, of course, you know, it's freezing cold. It's February, and it's, you know, sleeting. I mean, it's not very pleasant in New England in February. I went out there. I had to get down in there with the horse. And he was, at this point, his temperature was way below normal, and he was on his way out. So I told him, I said, get your whole team in here, and because they're so far out, I mean, there's no way we could actually lift the horse out without some assistance. So I said, get your big boom truck out here and get all the logs you can find and make a road out to where this horse is. And then get me some hoses and some warm water and as much as you can get, and bring hoses out here and get everybody out here that you can. So after they did all this, we're finally able to get a sling under him and very slowly lifted him out. We had to put water hoses at each of the four legs, you know, and the guys, he's pouring water down in next to the horse because he would, you know, the mud would just stick to his fur, and just, like, if you tried to lift him up in the center, it would just literally pull him in half. So by converting this solid mud into slush, we were able to slowly lift him out and get him back to dry land, you know, with this big, huge boom truck that I used to lift these heavy girders with. But that was only half the problem.
Wait, yeah. There's more?
Oh, yeah.
I'm clapping now that you got him out. All right.
Yeah, well, yeah, I didn't think we'd get him out, but we did. And now, you know, you ever try forcing a 3,000-pound animal to walk? I mean, it just doesn't, you know, I mean, the horse had literally given up. I mean, the owner was sitting there holding his head up. And we tried everything we can. We tried, you know, trying to see if we could just pull him or push him and get the tractor movement. Nothing worked. And finally, I said, wait a minute. who does he dislike the most as far as the other horses? And he said, well, it's the other stallion, obviously. Good, go get him. Well, as soon as he brought that other stallion back outside on a lead, and the other one, you know, I guess gave a sort of snorted a warning to him, he came alive. And after about 15 minutes, his temperature was back to normal again. You know, and then he was trotting around like nothing was ever wrong.
Well, in my mind, I was thinking, okay, what could entice him? I'm thinking more of a nice little filly that he wants to chase. But okay, I see it. It's man to man that.
Oh, yeah. You know, the testosterone kicked in. You know,
whatever it takes. It took hormones.
Whatever it takes. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think at that point, you know, he wasn't James Bond, so I don't think a filly would have worked at that point.
Well, you just have some amazing stories, and I can imagine there's many, many more in your book. You want me to call out what? Where can people find this book?
Actually, it's on Amazon.com, and or they can email me, and I'll be happy to send a copy of it.
And where can they email you? They'll have it on our website, but if you want to let them know at this point in time.
Yeah, it's drmattt77@gmail.com.
And that's actually three T's.
Three T's. drmatt77@gmail.com.
And if you had anything to do all over again, what would you do differently? Because you've had an amazing and exciting life from being a Green Beret to a veterinarian who's done a little bit of everything.
I don't know that I would do anything differently. I mean, I probably would have made a few other decisions. You know, some of the bad ones I made, you know, if I knew I didn't do more. But even the bad ones are a learning, you know, no, not another learning event, you know, so, but they teach you something, and each one teaches you something different. I never thought I'd be a doctor at all of any kind when I was a kid, and after I flunked out of college, I never thought I'd ever be a surgeon or anything else, but it was something I really loved.
So and, some tenacity and focus tenacity. In your life. Look
yeah,
where you've got.
Focus
so.
Is it. I mean, but I think when I talk to kids now, I said, look, I said, don't worry about what you have to do or what you really want to do. I mean, it's still early. I mean, I was, 24 before I went back to college with any idea of what I wanted to do.
And it's not uncommon now for people to wait a little bit longer, get some life experience, figure out what they want to do, then go back to school, and then they can really apply themselves to what they want. Because otherwise, you're in there going, I don't know, little of this, little of that, let me see. And so life experience sounds like it really did well by you.
Yeah, yes, it did. It really did. Very happy with what I did.
It sounds like it. You should be very proud, and you have many an animal that thanks you with their life that you were there to help them at their time of need.
My newest acquisition is laying on the floor right here beside me. It's a little feral. I mean, I took in ferals all the time, and it was another one that was brought in to be euthanized because every other cat in this particular feral cat's litter had died, and this only guy weighed about 4 pounds, and he was almost 6 or 7 months old, and he looked like he was going to die. And I said, you know, again, that eye contact thing. I don't know what it is, because I see hundreds of these a week, and just saw this one, and I said, okay. And he had already been in. He'd been neutered, and his ear was clipped and everything else, and they brought him in to be euthanized. I said, no, I can't do that. I'm going to take him, and he's going to be my pet. And
awesome.
He's been the greatest I've got.
So obstetrician, a ophthalmologist, a comic, and then just a tender heart. All those things and more describe Dr. Matt Toyo, who we've been chatting with today on The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Thank you very much for listening. And I wanted to give a little bit of a shout out to one of our listeners, Sherry Scanlon. She is a listener who actually lives in Japan, has emailed me several times. And if you have any questions, please feel free to email the pet doctor on petliferadio.com. I will answer any questions that you have. But Sherry has a dog who's having some hip problems. Cheek, and through her contact back and forth and her concern, she was able to learn about one of our veterinarians in Southern California who does rehabilitative medicine. So after she had a femoral head osteotomy, a surgery done to remove the ball of the ball and socket of the affected hip in Japan, she was able to contact Dr. Walland and have some ideas of what to do for rehabilitative medicine. So thank you very much, Sherry, for listening. Anyone else out there who's been getting some good feedback, things that you've been able to use in your particular life with your pet, I'd love to hear about it. So thank you for listening to Dr. Bernadine Cruz today and Dr. Matt Toyo on The Pet Doctor. Please listen again next week. We'll have more information on how to have you be the best pet owner you can be. Thanks for listening. Have a great one. Bye.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.